Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
That one of the girls who was affiliated with the guy who paid for the tickets said that she had sold SOLD, my daughter, 2 weeks prior to a man. And they found her. She was basically sitting in a ball naked, kind of curled up in a fetal position. I want people to see, you know, that she was naked. So they covered her up. Basically, they were on their way to Walmart at the time, and they took her in, put her in the car, and got her some clothes at Walmart, and took her back to their place.
20-year-old Alexis Scott disappeared from Peoria, Illinois after attending a party in the early morning hours of September 23, 2017. To fully understand what may have happened to Alexis, you have to go back several weeks to a tragic event that happened to her during a trip that she made to Vegas. Alexis didn't tell her mom, April, all of the details of what happened during that trip, but her mom could see the bruises on her when she returned. When Alexis disappeared in September, her mom started to learn more about the terrible ordeal from others that she had confided in. Was this connected to her disappearance just weeks later? I'm Marissa, and this is episode 110 of The Vanished, Alexis Scott's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Since Alexis disappeared, her mom April has been fighting to find answers to the many questions surrounding her daughter's disappearance. Alexis is a daughter, a sister, and a friend to many, but she's also a mom. She has a 2-year-old son that she adored. One reason that her family is so concerned about her disappearance is that they know that Alexis would never go this long without contacting her little boy. She wouldn't have just walked away and left him behind. April has been caring for Alexis's son since she went missing. You may hear him a couple times during my interview with April.
She can't go even a few days without knowing that her son is okay, checking on him, wanting pictures, and not seeing him is something that she couldn't deal with. She would often, if she was going to be gone for a while, say, "Hey, Mom, give me some pictures, do something." She would have contacted me way before now if she had the ability to do so.
Leading up to her disappearance, Alexis had been living at home with her mom, brother, and her son. On the evening of Friday, September 22nd, April and Alexis's son went to bed, but Alexis and her brother stayed up. They were talking while she was communicating with some people on social media. He remembers her leaving that night sometime between 11:30 and 12. When April woke up the next morning, she noticed that Alexis wasn't home, and her son told her that she had left the night before. Alexis had made plans with her mom that day, so she tried to reach her to figure out what was going on.
Sometime Saturday, I called her a couple times, I think in the afternoon, to see, you know, where she was and why she hadn't gotten back home, because we had plans for the weekend. And I didn't get a call. I didn't get an answer when I called her, so I waited a while, and then I called her again on Saturday, probably 4 or 5 times I called her up until about little after 9, and I didn't get a response. And I text her a couple of times using her Facebook app, because that's the way we've kept in touch, because she didn't want to pay her cell phone bill. She said she had money for other things. So Sunday came around, and I called, and that was September 24th. And I called her again using the Facebook app, and I got no response. So I called again around 11 o'clock Sunday, and I still got no response. So I texted hello, and she didn't respond. And so I went on about my day getting ready for Monday, because it was a work day coming up. And I didn't text her again until Monday night around 7:30-ish, thinking, wow, she should have been home by now. If she was, you know, going out with her friends for the weekend, she would definitely, you know, be home by Tuesday, you know, Monday going into Tuesday. And I didn't get a response. So, again, around 7:30 or so, text her again, you know, I called her and no response. So I text her and I said, please call home, and she didn't respond. And I wasn't able to sleep well Sunday night going into Monday. So about 1 o'clock Monday morning, I text her again, and I called, and I didn't get a response. So then Tuesday, I was like, wow, this is like crazy. Like later on Tuesday, after I got off work, I tried calling her and I didn't get a response. So then when I got off work, I called her and didn't get a response. So I told her, hey, you know, if I don't hear from you, I'm going to file a missing persons report, because she had been through an ordeal about 3 weeks prior.
This ordeal that April mentioned was the trip that Alexis had made to Vegas. Alexis had met a man that describes himself as a party promoter, who also supposedly recruits women for things like modeling and backup dancing. From what we can gather, Alexis was under the impression that she was going to Vegas for a few days to work as what she described as an escort and essentially be eye candy for men at a party. This man purchased tickets for Alexis and a friend to travel from Illinois to Las Vegas for this event. Once they arrived, Alexis learned that the party was canceled and things took a frightening turn. April was back in Illinois with no idea what was happening in Vegas. She tried to contact her daughter several times, but each time she called, she would either get a man or the friend that had been there with Alexis. When Alexis didn't make her scheduled flight home, April began to grow more concerned. Then, April received a telephone call from a woman in Sacramento, California, who had found Alexis several hundred miles away from where she had been in Vegas.
A lady called me from California, says she had found my daughter on the strip in California, that she had been forced into prostitution, that that's what not what she went out there for, and that my daughter had told her the story, that she basically went out there on a trip to be with friends and to go to a bachelor party, and when they got there, they found out that the party was canceled after they got there, not before they left on the plane trip, but after they actually got to Las Vegas. That she escaped whoever had taken her in California and did so naked. And when they found her, she was basically sitting in a ball naked, kind of curled up in a fetal position. I want people to see, you know, that she was naked. So she still had a sense of pride. So they covered her up. They were on their way to Walmart at the time, and they took her in, put her in the car, and got her some clothes at Walmart, took her back to their place. Says she had nothing on her, not a purse, not shoes, not socks, nothing. She's butt naked, no belonging. And they contacted me, and the girl basically did most of the talking. My daughter wouldn't get on the phone. And she said, she told me my daughter's name, told me what happened. And I was like, kind of demanding, I need to talk to her, make sure it's her, because I've been calling her phone and not getting an answer, and I need to make sure it was her. And I could tell my daughter was really upset, just by the way she was talking to me. Her tone was very not like her, but she still didn't tell me what happened. And she needed a bus to her home, and I asked her how come she didn't make the flight, and she said, it's too much to talk about, just get her home right away. So I got everything together, and that was on September the 1st. It was the first time I heard from her. And she was due back home, I believe it was the Monday prior to that date.
April was able to get Alexis back home on a bus, and two of her friends picked her up at a bus station in the Chicago area and brought her back to Peoria. April noticed that Alexis was bruised up and appeared to be shaken by what had happened during her trip, but she didn't want to talk about it. She was afraid that her mom would go to the police. Alexis did write a post on Facebook about being kidnapped and forced to do things that she didn't want to do. She mentioned that during this time, she wasn't able to say anything because she was being watched the entire time. If you look at her Facebook page for this time period, she goes from sharing videos from Vegas where she looks excited to just posting random things. It wasn't what you'd expect to see from someone visiting a new city for the first time. There were no more videos or pictures from her trip after the ones she posted when she initially arrived. It's unclear if someone was having Alexis make random posts on her Facebook page to make it appear that she was active on social media, or if someone else was making those posts while logged into her account. April didn't know all of the details of what happened in Vegas and California, but she knew enough to be frightened for her daughter. When April again couldn't find Alexis just weeks later after she had left late at night to go to a party, it was like she began reliving that nightmare all over again. Just to clarify, the two men that April mentions in the following clip are the friends who had driven Alexis back to Peoria from the bus station in Chicago.
So I was like, I'm not going to go through this again. So I went ahead and texted her, like I said, and let her know I was going to file a missing persons report. And on my way home, I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go home and see if she's home. In the process, I drove by where one of her friends worked that she had been corresponding with during the time of her trip back to Peoria from California / Las Vegas. And he just so happens he was a peddler in the area, and he was at the gas station. And I pull up to the gas station. I'm kind of frantic by then. And I say, hey, have you seen Alexis? And he says, not since the weekend. I said, what do you mean the weekend? And he said that him and another guy who also was part of her return to Illinois had worked together to get her back from Chicago to Peoria from the Greyhound bus station. And I said, well, okay, so what's he got to do with? And he said, well, he and I and her went out riding around, smoked a joint, and I was getting tired, and so I wanted to go home. And during that time, Alexis had gotten a text about a party that was going on in the area, not too far from the local gas station. She was planning on attending, but he hadn't been invited. And so he went on home, he says. And the driver of the car that they had drove around with agreed, I guess, to take her to the location of 100 Richmond Avenue. So I asked him to contact the other guy, and he did while I was standing there. And he said the last time he saw her, he had taken her back to our house to change clothes, and she changed clothes and went to the 100 block of Richmond Avenue. He wasn't sure which house he dropped her off at. It seemed like it might have been between two houses, so he wasn't sure because all the houses in that over location, which is about three houses, I had people outside on the porch, so he wasn't really sure which house she walked up to, but that she was going to meet a guy that confirmed that he had a blunt or some marijuana or something that they were going to smoke. That was the last time he saw her. And I was like, well, that's really weird. I said, so he didn't go back and pick her up? And he said, no. I said, wow, okay. So I went back to, I came back home, and she wasn't here. And so I asked her brother about what I had been told about her coming back Saturday morning, early hours, because she didn't have a key. Somewhere between her trip to California and Las Vegas, she lost her house key. Her cell phone was taken during that trip time, her iPhone that she had. I wasn't sure what phone she had with her. I knew she had a phone, but what the phone looked like, all I know was black. I didn't know, you know, who the carrier was or the name of the phone brand and that. So I asked him, I said, did she come back home and change clothes? And he said, no, Mom. He said, if she had to come back home, I would have had to open the door, and she usually knocks on my window to let her in. And he said he didn't remember her coming back to change clothes. So at that point, I went ahead and called the police station and told them that I wanted to make a missing persons report, that I hadn't seen my daughter since Friday, and told the officer who came what I had been told by her friend's so-called associate and that where he was. And the officer at first seemed really happy, you know, like doing his job, no big deal. when he came back from talking to the young man at the gas station who had last seen her on that Saturday/Friday, he seemed visibly disturbed. He wasn't the happy, jolly person that left here to go and talk to the young man. And he said at that time he was going to file a missing and endangered report on my daughter. When I asked him what changed his mood, he didn't really respond. He just kind of said, well, let's go on and get this paperwork signed and you get this in right away. And I said, okay.
After April reported Alexis missing, she began contacting more friends. This is when she learned that Alexis had expressed concerns for her safety.
Then I proceeded to contact her other female friends that she often associated with, and no one seemed to have heard from her or seen her. I got on her social media at that time to see if she had been on Facebook, if she had been talking to anybody, if anybody had seen her, and everybody that she normally talked to that were in her social contacts that she talked to frequently had not seen her, had not spoken to her. And I began to ask questions like, has she been saying anything about her trip? Has she been acting different? One of her friends definitely remembered her saying that she was worried that somebody was coming after her. And I said, coming after her, like what? And she said, well, I could just send you an inbox of a message that was sent to me. And she did. And it was from a young man who stated my daughter had told her around the 18th or 19th of September that somebody had been calling her, and she knew the person, and told her that they would be looking for her, and she was scared and she didn't know what to do. And I asked, well, how come nobody told me so that I can prevent this from happening? And at least know, you know, question her more and find out, you know, who did she think was looking for her and why? I was told they just didn't know. They didn't think anything of it. I said, well, considering that you knew what happened on her trip to Las Vegas/California, why wouldn't you think this is important? And I just got a basic shrug and no comment.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. As the days passed, concern for Alexis continued to grow. April and some friends gathered to conduct a search on their own.
So I kept doing the same things I was doing, waiting to hear back from detectives at the Peoria Police Department. I didn't hear anything, so I moved ahead. And her friends and I formed a search party to begin looking for her. I believe that was October 1st, 2017, which was on a Sunday. And we started it near the house where she was last known to have been at. And during that time, we noticed that the residents of that house were power washing their house. We thought that to be odd. I stayed at the location of the search site, and the party went out to search the area, basically looking for any clues, clothes, phone, anything that connected her disappearance to her. And they found nothing, but found it strange that there was power washing going on at this house. Mind you, it's almost a week later. Well, it is a week later because she disappeared on a Saturday. So the October 1st would have made it a total of 7 days she would have been missing. I had not heard back from the Peoria Police Department other than my initial contact. Around about 3 hours into our search, we got a call from a local resident on the south end of Peoria who thought they had seen her on Wheatingham Street, which is a known drug area. So we moved our search to the south end of Peoria. In the process, I received a phone call from the lead detective on the case apologizing for not having gotten contact with me and told me that he had been off for a few days and Sunday was the first day he was given or knew that he had a missing persons report. And I asked him if he would like to meet us at that location that we were moving to, which was near Roosevelt Middle School in Peoria. And he said no, he needed time to look over the case. So I never actually met him until maybe 2 or 3 days later where he wanted to meet up. And I told him what I knew, which was the residents of one of the houses that she supposedly was at had been less than 3 hours of the party dissipating, had requested that a washer and dryer be moved quickly from the residence. And we all in our search party at the time and the team that I had thought it rather odd that a party that went on basically 12, 13, 14 hours, they were still up and requesting that a washer and dryer be moved. Someone did respond to the request for a washer and dryer removal. The person who put the request out wanted it moved quickly and was willing to pay cash. Well, in my mind's eye, I thought, well, this is all suspicious activity to me. But when I presented it to the detective at the time, he told me it's nothing, don't worry about it. These guys are supposedly people who work on washer and dryers, fix them all the time. It's no big deal. So he kind of blew that idea that I had out the window and shrugged it off like, nothing, you know, no big deal. Why are you worried about that? When I asked him about my concern about a power washing within a week's time of her disappearing, he said, oh, that's nothing. The city basically told them that they had to clean their premises or they would be fined. I said, but a power washing? I said, I said, I've lived in the area for over 20 years. I've never been told by the city that I needed to power wash my house. I said, don't you think that's strange? And he said, no, not at all. I said, well, can you check to see if that was what was requested by the city, that a power washing be done? He said he did already and that the city did tell him that. Come to find out later on down the road, the city never actually said, per se, cleaning the house by power washing. It said cleaning the premises. So even with that being known, my suspicions still grow, continue to grow with that location and those people that were involved.
One frightening piece of information that's come to light is that April learned that there may be connections between the people at the party and the man who had sent Alexis to Las Vegas.
I know from those who have spoken that there were at least 12 people at this location. They're denying that it was a party. The mother of the home was home at the time. And the men involved are 21 plus years old. There was supposedly the same gentleman that was involved in her trip to Las Vegas tied to these people at this residence, which also heightened my concern for her being missing. And that with the information that I received, that she was afraid for her life and not knowing what to do and being told that somebody was looking for her, was easy for me to figure out what may have transpired, but not so much for the detectives involved. They don't seem to see a connection, and I'm having a problem with that.
Earlier, April had mentioned that a man claimed to have dropped Alexis off at a party on Richmond Avenue, but someone else came forward claiming to be the one who dropped Alexis off at the party.
There was a taxi cab driver / Lyft person who says she dropped her off at that location between 4 and 4:30. So we have two different people saying they dropped her off at this location. And no one at the house has confirmed how she got there. Was it by a taxi driver or was it by the friend? So that part has never been confirmed one way or another by anybody there.
The cab driver who came forward said that she knew Alexis and that she would always call her if she needed a ride because Alexis felt like she could trust her. When Alexis was dropped off, she told the cab driver that she didn't plan on staying long, probably only about an hour because she had to get back to her son. On top of the mystery of who dropped Alexis off that night, the people at the party have made conflicting statements about when she left.
When I asked the young man, I actually inboxed him. I didn't want to go to the house because of the way the police officer was acting when he came back from talking to the original person. I asked him, when was the last time you seen my daughter? His original statement was she left walking. She had crossed the highway, basically, and headed towards the house, which we live about maybe 4 or 5 blocks from where she was at. And had she cut across like they said she did, she would have been home staying maybe 10 minutes if she walked that way. And then another time I asked him, was he sure how she left? He stated that she walked towards Lynn and Richmond, which is the opposite way of going home. He also stated that he was in the backyard and wasn't sure which way she left, which I have problems with that because how do you know she walked towards Richmond and Lynn if you were in the backyard and couldn't see anything? At that time, there was still foliage, grass, bushes, trees, and that in the area. Fall hadn't quite set in. It was still warm here. Chilly, but warm, and everything was still green and alive. And then when he was questioned again, and so were a few other ladies who were there, all of a sudden, she left in a blue Impala. So he debunked his whole statement, but apparently he was in the backyard the whole time. The blue Impala supposedly pulled up to the front of the house. If it pulled up to the front of the house and he was in the backyard, he couldn't have seen it.
Not only do they have conflicting stories about how she left, but also exactly when she left.
Yeah, in the wee hours of Saturday morning between 5 and 5:30, supposedly, she left, according to the gentleman. According to the ladies at the party, they had went on a liquor run, and between 6 and 7 o'clock, she was no longer sitting on the porch of the house waiting for a ride. Another young lady says that she went to a car that had pulled up that was dark and thought it was her car. She had a prior DUI and was unable to drive, so she was waiting for a ride. She says that when she walked up to the car, she realized it wasn't her ride and walked back to the house where they were all gathered. And then my daughter walked in the direction of the car and supposedly got in the car. But she never saw the driver. The windows were dark tinted. And Impala was the word they used, but since then they have changed it to maybe they weren't sure what kind of car it was, except for that it was dark, a dark color, black or blue, with tinted, dark tinted windows.
I asked April if she knew anyone who had a car like the one that's been described.
Well, she had a former boyfriend that she had been dating up until August until she had left. They had fallen out and she had not been living at home. She probably moved home probably the end of July, early August. And he had had a car wreck over the summer in which they both were in and almost got killed. Before she went out of town, he had gotten a new car. I remember him coming over saying, "Hey, I told you I would come up. I got my new car." And he was showing me the car. I didn't think at the time really to pay any attention. I was just basically saying, "Yeah, you did. Good luck. You know, let's keep this one and keep insurance on it, da da da." And this car was dark in color, and it also had dark windows, but the kind of car it was and brand and all that, I don't have any clue. I didn't really pay that much attention to it. And they ended up driving off, and that was that for that day. And I never saw the car again. So, yeah, there is somebody with a dark colored car, but whether that is the same person or not, I don't know, because he had moved from Peoria to Joliet. The young men who were at the party also have relatives who also have dark car with dark tinted windows. So can I say for sure? No, I really couldn't. The detectives in Peoria also drive Impalas with dark tinted windows. So it could be anybody.
With all of the conflicting statements about what happened that night, April doesn't know who or what to believe. As I'm sure you can understand, she began making connections between her disappearance and that fateful trip to Las Vegas. Once Alexis went missing the second time, some friends that she had confided in began coming forward with bits of information that Alexis had told them. This led April to believe that there's a strong chance that her daughter was trafficked not just once, but possibly twice.
In one of her Facebook posts, she stated that she had been kidnapped. She didn't really go into detail on Facebook about the kidnapping when she got back to town. She also talked to her friends about the same thing on Facebook. She wanted to get together with some people that she had been, you know, running with prior, and had stated that she had basically been kidnapped. She was concerned. According to the friend who inboxed another friend, again, she stated that they were calling her, trying to get her back, and she was told that they would find her. Here recently, some information came up where a young lady rode the bus with her from Reno, Nevada, is where she boarded, to Utah. And the young lady, her and my daughter, just happened chance met on the bus. And she stated that Alexis and her got to be real good friends on a few hours of a bus ride that they took together on the Greyhound. And a complete stranger basically told me that Alexis had told her that she had been taken, and her and the friend that she went out to Las Vegas with were in a car together getting high and drinking. And when she woke up, I guess they were headed to California knowingly. They were going to California. But when she woke up from what seemed like she had been drugged, according to the friend on the bus, she did not see the friend that she had been riding with. She had disappeared. And when she woke up, she was in the car with a guy. And the guy basically would not let her get out of the car. She told the guy she had to go to the bathroom. He refused to let her go to the bathroom. She basically said she would defecate in his car if he didn't. And they pulled over for her to go to the bathroom. And I guess there was another guy outside walking around, looked like he was searching. She didn't tell her if the guy was black, white, whatever. She never mentioned that part. And the guy in the car told her basically, when you get out of this car, don't go that way. Don't signal to the guy across the street. Do your business and get back in this car. And he had hit her a couple times prior to her getting out of the car. He used the bathroom to make sure she got back in the car. Alexis told her that she was afraid of the man, and the man told her if she got away, he would find her. I have since put the detectives in touch with the young lady who rode the bus with her. I don't know that they have called her. According to her, no one's called her to confirm her story or to even listen to what she had to say to this day.
Another detail that could be important was a message that Alexis sent to a friend stating that she had names and phone numbers. Could Alexis have found information about those who had taken her, and could that information have put her in danger?
She said she had names and phone numbers. Apparently, at some point in time, the guy who took her, they would end up in a hotel somewhere in California, and she didn't know his name. She was on his laptop and found out his name to be Chris. And in the process of her trying to find out who she was with and where she was at, she got some names and phone numbers off this laptop. And she sent this to somebody telling them, I got names and phone numbers. Now, what that meant, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, how to connect those dots together. But the name Chris came up from the girl who rode the bus with her. That's all she could recall from their conversation, that his name was Chris. And at some point in time, she had inboxed a friend of hers here in Peoria, I believe, in which she told them she had names and phone numbers. And this was during her trip back. Exactly what that meant, I don't know. I don't know if that means she had some good contact for having an extravagant life, or if she had contact relating to her situation, not really sure if that meant she had drug contact. I really don't know what that meant, because there was no, the sentence basically was incomplete. You know, it could have meant anything.
After learning all of this information about what had happened to Alexis, April began doing more research about human trafficking.
Yeah, I've done so much research on trafficking. I knew very little about it, even though I work for the public school system. It's not something we talk about. We talk about everything else, but for some reason, this has never come up in high school. And I've been in high school probably for about 16 years now. And I don't, never remember in service on it or having an assembly on it, anything to let kids know you need to be aware of your surroundings and who you associate with and how you associate, nothing to this effect. So I basically have done my research on the situation since I've become privy to the fact that this could be a possibility, a real possibility. What I've read is they groom them over a process of a couple years, maybe a few months. Usually it's a year or so to get to know them, their habits, and to increase whatever capacity they may be at. Like if it's drug use or alcohol use, they will make sure they get it for free, make sure they get as much as they want whenever they want, kind of get them the clothes they want, the hairstyles or wigs or nails done or whatever, tattoos, whatever makes them happy to win their confidence.
While April was researching human trafficking, she started to realize that the grooming process that's so commonly used was very similar to what she had watched happen with her own daughter. After Alexis and her son's father had broken up, she was in a place that left her more vulnerable to the clever tactics that these people used to draw victims in.
When I look back, I see exactly that happening over the last year or two, because she had her baby about 2 years ago. So shortly after that, her and the father parted ways, and she, I guess, began reaching out, I guess is the way to put it, to find herself, to find a new life, to get her head out of the fact that they weren't going to be together. He was abusive to her, and she wasn't planning on going back to him, although she went several times to take him back to visit his father, who lived in Chicago. She knew, based on their interactions, that they would never be the family that she had hoped for. So I believe that kind of put her into a distraught state of mind, thinking, well, we're going to have a happy family and we're going to have a good life together and live together and all that, which I never condoned them living together and actually didn't support it. Anyway, I offered her the opportunity to live at home, to go back to school, to go to college, so that she would never have to live that kind of life and suffer the consequences that go with shacking up. So I was totally against that, and I'm sure that caused some heartache for her and stress in our relationship together. I didn't necessarily approve of her friends or the contacts she had. I personally wouldn't have chosen a lot of the free people that she frequently visited and partied with. Just even if I was her age, I could just see that they weren't the type of people that you ought to be with on every day or once a week or once a month. So a lot of them I wouldn't have dealt with at all. But because she is both my daughter and is my daughter, I kind of went along with whatever she was doing just to keep our relationship together for the sake of the child, for the sake of her sanity, because I knew she possibly could be going through some kind of depression with having the child early in her life. And I just wanted to be as supportive as I possibly could. So a lot of things I put up with that I probably shouldn't have. And had she not been my daughter, I certainly would not have, but she was and is. So.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One possible source of information that could be very helpful is the phone that Alexis had with her. That phone is still missing. April had mentioned that she didn't currently have the phone activated, but would use apps like Facebook while on Wi-Fi to communicate with people. A complicating factor is that it appears that Alexis may have logged into her Facebook account on devices that belong to others. So no one is quite sure if activity on her Facebook account was Alexis or someone else.
The problem is she had logged into several people's phones, according to the people that we have been in touch with who claim to be close to her. I find it hard to believe that she changed her password when she came. Well, before she came back from this trip, during her Greyhound trip, she used her friend's phone and she logged into her account, her Facebook account, and she changed her password. And I remember because she told me that she was going to change it because somebody had taken her phone while she was out there and she didn't have access to her account. And she could see that somebody was posting to her page and she didn't know who it was. So I said, well, you better hurry up and change it. You never know people could put on your page. I've told you 1,000 times, don't stay logged into your Facebook when you log out of your phone or whatever it is you use, make sure you log out. And we've gone around and around about this since she was in middle school. But nonetheless, somebody had actually posted to her page. She changed her password. When all this came about, I didn't know so many people were logged into her, had access to her Facebook or an inbox and all that because they had the password, which I'm not understanding how one of her friends got the password unless she had used it in the past at some point in time. And she was able to give that password to the detective in charge of the case. Yeah, basically I'm sitting there in awe of how she got it. She's like, yeah, I got the password. This is the first time she said anything to me about it, although we've talked several times or had spoken several times prior to this because she was the one who told me about the friend who had sent her the inbox and Alexis was fearful for her life. So I'm wondering, you know, I'm not saying anything, but I'm wondering while I'm sitting by her, okay, so you had this information the whole time and you never bothered to tell me. So I just thought it was kind of weird that she knew it the whole time and never said, hey, Mom, all her friends tell me, Mom, let's go look in her inbox and see what's going on. But she told me she had been looking into the inbox the whole time. And she gave that information to the detective and told him how to get in. I guess he didn't know how to log into Facebook. It was his first time, according to him. But not only did she have it, which this young lady and her had not spoken since August, the breakup with her boyfriend that she had been dating over the summer, her and he and she fell out. They were basically just stopped talking. The friend was supposed to go on the trip to Las Vegas as well, who had the password. Some kind of way she backed out. She didn't end up going at all. So I'm just shocked that she would even have it because according to her, her and Alexis hadn't spoken since before she went on the trip to Las Vegas. There's a lot of things in the air that just don't make sense to me right now. I'm sure they will later on, but right now they don't.
That piece of information really stuck out to me. If Alexis and her friend had a falling out in August and had not spoken since that time, and then Alexis changed her password after the Vegas trip, how did this friend have the new password? This is just one of the many strange details that don't quite add up. The detective handling her case is trying to gather more information about who was accessing her account.
According to detective, have subpoenaed several phones and Facebook accounts that she had contact with. Who and what, I don't know. But I was told it was at least 8 people or 8 phones, one or the other. I'm not sure if it's a phone or people, but yeah, or accounts, I'm sorry.
April has become very frustrated with the way that the local police department has handled her daughter's case. She received a very frightening message about Alexis a few weeks after her disappearance, and they didn't respond with any sense of urgency.
On October the 11th, or 10th, it's the first time I went to City Hall here in Peoria, Illinois, to voice my concerns about needing help and feeling like nothing was being done to actually move this case along with the information that I had. On October the 10th, after I left, or on my way to City Hall, I got a message saying that one of the girls who was affiliated with the guy who paid for the tickets said that she had sold SOLD, my daughter, 2 weeks prior to a man. She didn't know who the man was, or at least she didn't tell who that man was. When I called the police station to report what I had been told after leaving City Hall for the first time, no officer came out. I was told that since this was an active investigation, the detective in charge would get in touch with me. Nobody came the entire night. Nobody called the next day. On October 11th, the next day, I called sex trafficking and reported and was given a case number. Now, whether they took it and said, yes, we're going to go ahead and work the case or not, is something I don't know about, because they told me they wouldn't call back to let me know if they were involved or not. But on October the 11th, I moved forward because nobody else would. Several people since then have made calls who are part of my campaign to get the FBI involved. So there are several different case numbers at this point. Which one is doing what, I don't know. There's been no contact with me by anybody from the FBI. But I did do my part as a parent. When I was told, I was like livid. I'm like, real sold? And it was about that week that I knew about her concern about being kidnapped, about her concern about somebody looking for her, fillers basically being sent out to find her at any cost. So, yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, I can't make it make sense to the men who are involved in this case, who are supposed to be in authority, but it definitely all fits together.
When April receives tips, she reports them to the police, hoping that they'll quickly act on these tips, since some of them seem to be very time sensitive. She's become frustrated time and time again after learning that her messages sat in a voicemail account because the detective was on vacation and no one was checking the messages. Just a small amount of communication letting her know to speak to someone else in the department during these times would make her feel a lot better about the way her daughter's case is being handled. I know that sometimes law enforcement officials look at these cases like it's just another day, another case. But to April, that's her daughter and that's her world. April has been doing everything in her power to try to locate Alexis and bring her home. She keeps going back to what happened on that trip to Vegas and can't help but believe that there's some connection. The police department isn't convinced. The fact that Alexis was expressing fear for her life leading up to her disappearance is not something that she can look past.
It was the 18th or 19th or so that she put that information out there that somebody had been bothering her, that she was definitely concerned for her life and her well-being. So no, I can't let that go. And yes, I do have to connect those dots to that trip, yes, and those people involved at that time.
The fact that Alexis had worked as an escort has made some people wonder if she could have gone out to work that evening and something bad happened. April told me that from what she can tell based on what Alexis was wearing that night and the communications she had with others, she believes that Alexis intended to simply hang out with friends that evening.
Even though she may have had a prior life to where she chose to date or make her money, however she made it, that's not what she was doing that night. That night she was going to meet up with people that she thought were her friends, people that she had been associating with for at least 9 months to a year. So that night is all we're concerned about, that night. Not what she was doing in her life to make ends meet for herself or for whatever reason she was doing it. What was she doing that night? Was she answering an ad that night? Was she had a proposition that night? That's not what I'm getting. I'm getting she had plans to meet up with friends. She had been stressed out about what had happened to her 3 weeks prior. She just needed to chill and relax, get her mind back, and sounds like she was set up to me.
April doesn't know exactly what happened to Alexis, but there is a scenario that she thinks may be likely.
At this point, I think she might have been drugged up by them telling me that she had been getting high in the car, and then she goes to this house, and it's a party, and there's free drugs of all sorts there, and alcohol. She could have met her capacity. She could have got, you know, to the point where she blanked out or passed out, depending on what kind of drug it was. And she may have just not even known what was happening to her and been taken off somewhere. I don't believe any of the story that I've heard about her leaving. I don't believe any of that. The videos in the area don't confirm her coming or going, which I have a problem with that. I don't know if the videos were edited or she never actually went to the house and they're saying she did. I don't know, but there's no proof one way or another that she was there, and there's no proof one way or another that she left. Only hearsay. It's all hearsay.
When I look at all the details that we know about this case, one thing that really sticks out to me are these people who were supposedly her friends. I think that Alexis had been hanging around this group of people believing them to be friends, when in reality, they had bad intentions. Remember April mentioned when Alexis was in Vegas, she passed out in a car and woke up and the friend she had flown out there with was gone. That friend made it back home on her scheduled flight, so was she part of a possible setup? April told me more about her conversations with this so-called friend.
I remember talking to the young lady she was supposed to fly back with, claiming that she knew where Alexis was in California, that she was going to go get her, and she ended up not doing so. Then turned around and said that she didn't know where Alexis was. I believe my daughter gave her the location of where she was in California, believing that her friend would come and get her, and they never came. I believe that information was passed on to the person that who paid for the tickets to California or to Vegas, and a setup was put in place at that time for whatever happened in California. Again, the same friend is the one who was supposed to have been with her on the trip to California with these strangers and woke up and my daughter wasn't aware where she was or where her friend had gone off to. So the friend does know. The friend refuses to give any more information, claims she knows nothing, but her inbox to me says something totally different than a live video that she made, basically telling me off, I guess. But when I compare what she told me in my inbox to the live video she made, the story doesn't add up. I haven't responded to her at all because the proof is in what she sent originally. So there's nothing really to say except for you're lying somewhere along the line. And that's me telling her that is not going to make it any better. You know, you're lying and nobody needs to tell you. I've also shared this information with the detectives who basically blow me off. They don't want to connect the dots to what happened 3 weeks prior, even though it's pretty obvious from my point of view as a parent what happened and how. But to everybody else, it's like, couldn't have happened that way. This is a theory. That's just a theory. Everything is just a theory.
From what I've been able to gather, I believe this man who sent Alexis to Vegas puts himself out there as a party promoter looking for beautiful women to be models and backup dancers. And then he pulls a bait and switch on them. These young women, like Alexis, see a promise of a modeling career and a lavish lifestyle. But it's not everything that it appears to be. I think what happened to Alexis is important for people to hear, because you just never know when the same thing could happen to someone you love, like a friend, a daughter, or a sister. I also believe that there could be women involved in this recruiting process. With Alexis, I think this friend who went with her to Vegas may have known what was going to happen. But Alexis most likely had her guard down because she just thought she was flying out to Vegas with a friend. Then she woke up and her friend was gone and she was being held by two men. So what happened to Alexis Scott in the early morning hours of September 23, 2017? Did she become a victim of human trafficking? Her mom believes that she could have been taken again by the same group of people who were involved in Vegas. If this is what happened, Alexis could have been taken anywhere. What about the message that April received saying that her daughter was sold to a man? Or could Alexis have been targeted as some sort of revenge for escaping the first time around? Why are there conflicting stories regarding who dropped her off at that house on Richmond Avenue? There may be answers to some of these questions. There is surveillance video from a car wash across the street from that home, but April has never been allowed to see what's on the video. I do believe that this may be one of those cases where there are conflicting stories put out there to muddy the waters. I know that some people will judge Alexis for working as an escort, but please remember that at the end of the day, she is a mother, a daughter, and a friend. All of those people who love Alexis are victims of this as well. No one had the right to make Alexis go missing. If you have any information about the disappearance of Alexis Scott, April has requested that you please contact her, which you can do in several ways. I will be including April's email address in the show notes. You can also contact April on Facebook, where there's a group called Alexis Camry Scott Campaign. If you have a tip that you want to submit there on Facebook, she just asks that you don't post a tip in the group, but instead private message one of the administrators of the group or April herself. The number for the Peoria Police Department is 309-673-4521. To remain anonymous, you can call Crime Stoppers at 309-673-9000. Here's a clip of April describing her daughter. There's been some misinformation put out there regarding her appearance, and April wanted to clear that up.
There's one thing that does need to be corrected that I don't know where the information came from, and I don't know how it keeps popping up. My daughter's weight is between 110 and 115 pounds. She's a very thin frame, 5'2 young lady. Her skin tone changes all the time. She's biracial or multiracial, rather. Today she could have a tan, and hey, in a couple of days that could be gone. And it's really hard to actually depict what color she is. But she does have hues of tan brown that. But at no time does she ever stay the same, which none of us do once we go out in the sun. But she definitely does not stay the same as far as color tone. So, and she has very fine hair. She chooses to wear a wig. Why, I don't know. Her hair will grow down to her back. She left here natural, meaning her hair was, you know, she washed, shampooed, and pulled it up in a ponytail is what I was told, without a wig. I've checked for her wigs. Everything that she would have used if she was actually going on a date is still here. So she never left with any clothes, no makeup, or anything that's missing out of this house that belongs to her is the clothes she had on, her Jordans she had on, and her ID. That's it. All her bags, her carry-along bags, and she never goes anywhere. Even if she's going out with her girlfriends, does she not take a purse or a carry-along bag if she knows she's going to stay overnight? She had nothing. Everything is here. Everything. Even her toothbrush.
That brings us to the end of episode 110. I'd like to thank April for taking the time to speak with me. If you'd like to reach me, I'm on Facebook, where there's a page and a discussion group. I'm on Twitter at The Vanished Pod and on Instagram as well. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Ohio. Thanks for listening.
And I won't let it go. They want me to let it go, and I won't. They want me to pipe down. I won't. And I've stated that several times, not only to the people that are involved, but also to the police department, detective. I'm not that person. I'm not one of those, I'm going to let this ride. This is my child. I am not going to let this go. I don't know what other parents in Peoria or Illinois have done, but I personally cannot let this go. I will not. Somebody is going to have to come up with how to solve this problem, because I'm not going to move on. This is where I am now. This is my life, and I will deal with it.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.